You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Tell Ambassadors Jakar and Londo I want to see them in chambers now.
Yes, number six.
Then invite them again as firmly and as politely as you can.
Captain, either you snore or last night we had a hell of a breach in the hull.
What do I do now?
Old style, you roll over and go to bed. New style, you go out for pizza and I never see you again.
What's inside there?
One moment of perfect beauty.
Hello, and welcome to the Epsilon 3, a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. Each week, we review an episode of the 1990s sci-fi TV classic Babylon 5. This week, Season 2, Episode 15. And now for a word. I'm Paul.
I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And we are the Epsilon 3.
And the synopsis. An ISN news crew spends 36 hours on Babylon 5 to film a documentary, capturing a snapshot of life on the station, as well as the progress of the Narn-Centauri War. During the filming of the documentary, Babylon 5 must deal with a skirmish between the Narn and the Centauri on its doorstep. Written by JMS and directed by Mario Di Leo, this episode was released on the 3rd of May, 1995. It takes place from the 17th to the 19th of September, 2259. The last episode was in April. Now we're in September. Wow, that's a bit of a jump. This week's guest stars Kim Zimmer as Cynthia Talkman. Now, I looked her up on IMDb just to see if there was, you know, doing a bit of due diligence, making sure Sean didn't miss any Star Trek connections. Have we heard of Guiding Light in the US?
Yeah, it's a soap opera.
Yeah, I should imagine. She was in 1,935 episodes.
That's a lot.
That is a lot of any show, right? And she's the only person to have done that many, so I assume she was the main person. I don't know this woman, so everybody in America is going, oh, of course, she's, you know, tell me who she
is. I never watched that show either, so I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, that's a heck of a lot of film. Because basically, I look back and it said Guiding Light and then Babylon 5. And I thought, well, but what did she do in between? I mean, come on. Yeah. And then I realized she was doing Guiding Light in between.
Wow.
That's a lot of, and she did this while she was part of that cast. So she obviously had a contract that allowed her to go out and do other things. We also have Christopher Curry as Roland Quantrell, who sounds like an alcoholic drink. Granville Ames as Psychop. John Christian Grass as Johnny. Leslie Wing as Mother. Jose Rey as Eduardo Del Vientos. Bill Blair as another alien. And Josh Cox as Tech David Corwin. So, guys, what did we think of this episode? Sean?
Well, it was fun to see a different take on storytelling. And much like Dan, I was trying to write notes, and it was very difficult to write notes because stuff happened, but mostly it was battles between the Narn and the Centauri. And we got to see Super Mario back during one of the interviews, so that was cool. It was a fun show. It was different. I guess it advanced the plot somewhat, but it was more of a day in the life kind of thing. So it was kind of a nice change of pace.
Dan.
Same sort of thing. Like whenever I take notes previously, I sort of write what's the A plot, what's the B plot, what's the C plot, and try and see where it overweaves and, you know, does it have an impact on all the other things? But everything was the A plot. It was all connected in some way. I kind of felt like, did they do this because they couldn't work out a conceivable way of writing a normal episode with what they had? You know, if you really break down what actually happened in those 36 hours, there wasn't a lot of meat to make an episode out of. You know, we were able to learn a lot more about President Clark and what's been going on and the kind of sentiment back home, but we didn't learn anything new there. And with the Narn-Centauri conflict, again, we didn't learn anything new. The Centauri are being underhanded and the Narn are being kicked about because they're losing. There was nothing new in this episode. However, watching it as an experience, I was really enjoying it. I like the idea that they changed the format, that they had a confidence about themselves that they could suddenly throw this at the audience. And it is something that you don't really see or didn't see back then. Now I can think of a handful of TV shows that do something like this, and it's sort of standard fare. But it almost feels like Babylon 5 did it first. And it was enjoyable.
I'd take issue with that. MASH did it first. There's about three or four episodes of MASH where they bring in a reporter and they go through interviewing people, and they basically just said, you're in character, he's going to ask you a question, you answer it as the character. And they interviewed all of the cast like that, and then had a show based on the fact that he was going to do this. So it's very good improv from the characters. I don't think these were improv as such. I think this was basically a scripted episode. But it felt very much the same. The reporter running around trying to get answers, and then next minute she's got somebody to talk to, and you know, it did feel like an episode of MASH. So I was a bit sort of somewhat disappointed they brought this in, because it was okay in MASH, but they were never really my favourite episodes, even because I didn't want to know more about the characters and what they felt. I just wanted to see some action on the screen. And this is what I was thinking with this. It's very good. You're bringing him backstory and how they feel and all this, but I don't really want that from a show. You can get that over time, you know, but by dropping in little bits in here and bringing people from the past or whatever, you know, and you know, a bit of backstory that way. But I thought this was a bit too personal, if you like.
There's an implausibility to the amount of access they seem to be getting as reporters. Like, I felt like it's a military installation still. They shouldn't be allowed into the CDC or anywhere really, or even in the council chambers when they're first in there and they're all shouting at Malari. It doesn't quite fit that they would have that kind of access, and then all of a sudden they get kicked out of it later in the episode. It seemed inconsistent. Yeah. However, as an experience watching it as a TV episode, I kind of enjoyed it.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go to the first scene. Cynthia Talkman, and boy does she talk, man, sets up the scene. Telling us that she and an ISN crew have spent 36 hours on board Babylon 5, asking hard questions and getting a little in. It's going to be one of them days, isn't it? Getting in a little over their heads. On arriving at the station, the ISN crew capture on film, video, floppy disk, or just the phones, a Narn ship shooting at a Centauri transporter, which then explodes. The crew are there as the casualties are brought into the station. And she tries to get a word with Dr. Franklin, but he's too busy to talk. Sheridan is also reluctant to give out too much information. I mean, who is this woman, right? I mean, no reporter I know that I've ever seen on TV barges into a triage area where there's people trying to get seen to and ask the main doctor who's giving triage at the time, yeah, what do you think about this? What do you think? Do you think it's a deliberate attack? Were they having weapons? Were asking all these questions? Let him do his job. He's a doctor trying to save lives.
It was a bit much. It seemed implausible.
I had instant hatred for the character, not for the actress, but for the character. I don't think this is right. I don't think anybody interviews anybody like that.
I don't think so.
But it makes sense, you know, if she's sort of the face, I guess, of the new direction of Earth, that they're being a bit more xenophobic, that they're actually sort of being like the Fox News network for this new presidency, then it's believable that we don't like her, and that, you know, it does fit into that agenda. What they're trying to get across is that Earth is desperately trying to justify why we should give up on Babylon 5. Mm. And she's pushing the party line.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But Malari does give an interview and is 100% the politician. He's concerned that the Narns would bring the fight into neutral territory, endangering the Centauri's human friends. Shikar is also hassled by the reporter, who's trying to put words into everybody's mouths, mainly because they won't. Mm-hmm. What does it take to call a place like this home? Well, Eduardo Del Vientos says it's a job. Second Lieutenant David Corwin, who gets his name for the first time, even though he's been credited all the way through as Tech David Corwin. He is Second Lieutenant David Corwin. And he says he's learned a lot in the last couple of years, and he feels safe here. And after a telling look towards Ivanova, who is obviously listening behind him and straightens up after he says that, He says it's a calm and pleasant environment and he's never seen anyone get upset.
I didn't believe him for a second.
No.
But Ivanova did seem to be pleased with his responses. So it was just great acting between the two of them. He gives that look, you know, he's aware that Ivanova's there. And she's sort of listening and she goes, oh, no, I'm not listening, really. And then he gives the reply and she goes, you know, gives that smile and a nod. And yeah, good boy, good boy.
It's those moments she's sort of touching the consoles and panels. Then all of a sudden she folds her arm and then she's back down to the consoles because she doesn't know what to do with her hands. Yeah. It's so good to watch. It's so good.
Yeah. Sort of at the end of it, she thinks, yes, you'll live. Sheridan says that working on Babylon 5 is like an old joke and it's one a hell of a big horse. Dr. Franklin says it's a dangerous place being in a large tin can surrounded by the vacuum of space. And you don't die instantaneously in space.
Yeah, that was quite the story.
It wasn't her question.
No, not at all. It just kept going on and on about it.
He was just all right, it's going to cut away now. It's been about 30 seconds. You know, it's a dangerous place. Fine. They've got their message. Then they'll cut to the next interview. No, he's still going. Does he think he's in a therapy session? And he's just constantly going on and on and on. It's like, this is the darkest place. I don't know what I'm going to do about myself. It's, you know, people don't understand what's going on. He tells this childhood story of a kid who killed himself in an airlock. I mean, what is going on? If anyone is ever in need of maybe a walkabout or something like that, I think this guy needs it. I'm calling it now.
Well, you know, all that triage he was doing, it's put him under a lot of pressure, a lot of stress. You know,
that's very true.
So Talkman states that in the last 3 years, there have been 6 murders, 3 acts of sabotage, including a bomb which took out 2 levels, and a barely averted attack by the Vorlon Empire, and 50 deaths by violence. So that's a total of 56 deaths in 3 years, which still makes it safer than an American high school.
I'm surprised that as an investigative journalist, she didn't realize that most of those are from people who have come to visit the members of staff on Babylon 5. Yes. It's someone from their past that they didn't try and connect the dots or anything like that.
Jakar gives a statement that says that the Centauri transporter was transporting weapons of mass destruction to the front line of the war, turning Babylon 5 into a supply route, which they will not allow to continue, even if it means shutting down Babylon 5 completely. Senator Quantrell is not sure how much concrete benefits there are to Babylon 5, but he does concede that it does keep Earth in a highly visible position with other alien races, and it is important to interstellar commerce and trade. Meanwhile, in the CNC, the perky and energetic Commander Ivanova, pronounced correctly, Ivanova, twice, she's looking into Jakar's claims about the transporter. She gives a brief history of her career, and when Talkman says,
"Now, Commander, I'm sure there's more to your story than that." Yes.
Very well understated. I liked it.
Yeah. "Now go away," was the next line. Garibaldi doesn't want to say anything that will get him fired, but there's always something going on. In the alien sector, Talkman sees Kosh before moving on to Delenn. She describes her planet on which there are 3 languages. I think it's the first in sci-fi, 3 different languages on one planet. Normally it's like one planet has one race and it's one language.
And one haircut usually too.
Yes. Talkman asks about Delenn's new look, but really lays it on thick with the insults before Delenn asks to stop and is called to the council chambers. In the council chambers, Jakar now has proof from Ivanova's investigation. That the transporter was indeed carrying weapons of mass destruction. Sheridan has logged a complaint to the Centauri government about this incident. However, Malardi points out that the weapons were outside the station and did not endanger life inside. Technicality. Jakar believes there are 8 more ships outside right now with more weapons of mass destruction aboard. Suddenly, all hell breaks loose outside. And we're only halfway through the episode.
Yeah, a lot happened, actually, but we didn't take much notes.
That's right. It was very very fast-paced. It was, you know, from interview to interview to scene, short little scenes, quick little, you know, sound bites. Narns and Centauri ships are firing indiscriminately, and the station is being hit. So Sheridan orders the B-5 fighters to open fire. And after a brief fight, the Centauri ships surrender. Sheridan orders the crew to be thrown in the brig. Jakar tells the history of the Narn-Centauri War in his own personal circumstances.
Why do you think they invaded back then?
Why does any advanced civilization seek to destroy a less advanced one? Because the land is strategically valuable, because there are resources that can be cultivated and exploited, but most of all, simply because they can. You have experienced much the same on your own world. There are humans for whom the words never again carry special meaning, as they do for us.
I do like his line, never fall back, never surrender. Sounds like another
film. A little bit like Galaxy Quest.
Yeah, that'll be the one. The Centauri came to help the Narn. Sorry, Malari says the Centauri came to help the Narn and did not start this war and only want peace. The Centauri war, a Centauri warship appears and Malari blockades Babylon 5. So much for peace. And nothing is allowed in or out until his ships are allowed to leave. He threatens to destroy Babylon 5 if necessary. Malari is so full of contradictions. One minute he is all, they started it and we are the victims. We just want peace. And the next it's, we want our weapons back so we can kill the Narns. And if we don't, we'll kill 240,000 innocent men and women and children in neutral space. I don't get him. I just don't get him at all. I mean, I know he's a politician. I know, he's, you know, but one minute he's saying, you know, very publicly this. And then suddenly he's blockading the ship publicly and not allowing anybody out.
He's a complex kind of guy.
The spin, the level of spin was just so believable from him. Like, I understood what he was doing and the way he was kind of wording it to kind of cover his own back. It's like, it's just here, it's just outside, and it's just going to be watching all of these transports leaving and going around. It's nothing to worry about, and it's like, you know, nothing to see here. It's absolutely fine. And there's massive fireworks going off in the background. Just everything. I'm wondering why we didn't see Warren. You know, we had a whole fighter squadron out there doing stuff. Like, we didn't get a cut to Warren or an interview with Warren's, like, what did he go through when he was fighting all of these fighters and what was going through his mind? You know, we had every other character, but not the one that we spent, you know, two seasons investing ourselves in.
That's because they couldn't afford to pay everybody in the cast because they had the lady from Guiding Light.
That's very true. Yeah. Not to mention Mario, I suppose. Yeah, they've got to afford Mario too.
Well, that's right.
I think Kefler was just on nights. He was obviously asleep.
Nice.
Next, adverts. Join the Psycor. What a frightening advert that was.
You know what it reminded me of?
Go on, Sean. What would it remind you of?
RoboCop. You remember all those commercials that they put in RoboCop for like Nukem and all that stuff? It reminded me exactly like that. And it also reminded me of this promo for another podcast right here on the ESO Network. And now for a word from them.
This Labor Day weekend, fandom is calling. Let Michael, Mike, Darren, and Jen help you answer the call with the latest news, notes, tips, and tricks on the DragonCon Report. Available as an audio podcast, visit DragonConReport.com, and for the first time ever, watch us on video via Facebook Live and YouTube. We want to help you celebrate your fandom in all the best ways. So listen up, and we'll see you at the con.
Yeah, I got Starship Troopers on this one as well for that little advert in between. You know, do you want to know more? You know, sign up today to the core.
No, the advert with the child, that was scary because at the end of it, he had his hair slicked back and he was wearing some dark jacket or something. I thought, oh my God. He just needs a pair of gloves. Did he see it? I didn't see if he had a pair of gloves on, but I can just imagine he did. But there was a very quick subliminal message. Did you guys actually see it the first time around, or did you?
I saw it out of the corner of my eye, but I didn't pause it or anything.
Yeah, I saw it. I thought, oh, what was that? So I rewound it, and I had to wait, try and pause it at the right time. But yes, there was a subliminal message that flashed up. It was quite funny. It is something you have to stop. I would have hated to have done that on video, you know, on VHS, because they're trying to pause it and get that with all the blurred, you know, all the fuzzy lines going across the screen and everything.
Yeah, when you think that this would have been broadcast on TV with no necessarily any repeats in the short term, they were betting that there would be a time when you could watch this back frame by frame and actually catch it.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
But the Psycor are everywhere, even in schools.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a little bit creepy.
Yes. Can you imagine Bester in a school, working in a school? He'd make an excellent headmaster.
Not true.
Very true.
Yeah, you know, but back in my day, this is going to make me sound really old, but 1976, when I started my secondary school, our headmaster used to have the mortarboard and the cape, and he used to walk down the centre of the corridors. Yeah. Keep to the left! Keep to the left! And everybody had to keep to the left. I still do that now. If I'm walking on a pavement or sidewalk, I always walk on the left. Trouble is, everybody else walks on the right, but they bump into me. I find myself going, keep to the left.
Your programming is now complete.
Sheridan gets a message from Earthdome. He tells the Centauri cruiser that any ship entering or leaving Babylon 5 that is fired on by the cruiser will be considered an attack on Babylon 5 itself, and they will respond accordingly. They send out an automated transporter to see if the cruiser is bluffing or not, and the transporter is allowed through. But then the Narn cruiser appears. There is a firefight in which both cruisers are disabled or destroyed. And in summary, Babylon 5 is worth it. Garibaldi, Malari, sorry again. In summary, is Babylon 5 worth it? Garibaldi and Malari say yes. Shikar doesn't know anymore. And Ivanova and Delenn also say yes. The senator says we'll have to see. Dr. Frankly says definitely yes. And he is saving lives. Delphiantos has a retirement he needs to pay for, so he says yes. Sheridan gives different reasons.
See, in the last few years, we've stumbled. We stumbled at the death of the president, the war, and on and on. And when you stumble a lot, you start looking at your feet. Now, we have to make people lift their eyes back to the horizon and see the line of ancestors behind us saying, make my life have meaning.
It's a similar speech to Sinclair in one of his episodes about why should we be in space, or why should Babylon 5 exist?
And to our inheritors before us saying, create the world we will live in. I mean, we're not just holding jobs and having dinner. We are in the process of building the future. That's what Babylon 5 is all about. Only by making people understand that can we hope to create a better world for ourselves and our posterity.
And that's about the episode, really. So, trivia. A subliminal phrase is flashed across the screen during the commercial for Psycor. It reads, the Psycor is your friend. Trust the core. The phrase appears for 1/6 of a second, double the FCC definition for a subliminal message. So if it had been an actual subliminal message, you wouldn't have even seen it. But you would have wanted to join the core. Mira Furlan cites this as one of her favourite episodes, as one of the main reasons she felt compelled to leave Yugoslavia was because of constant harassment in the press over the fact that she refused to take sides during the war. David Corwin, a recurring character since Signs and Portents, is finally given a name and the rank of Second Lieutenant. Interplanetary Expeditions, which is shown to be one of the segment's sponsors, had previously been mentioned in Infection as financing expeditions to worlds along the rim, including Ikara 7. At the time, Franklin was unable to find any information on them, so it appears they have since begun to foster a public image. When the ISN crew are approaching the station, a view from the cockpit of the ship can be seen with a scented cardboard tree hanging from the ceiling. I didn't spot that one.
Oh, I missed it too.
I'll have to go back and have a look at that. Senator Hidoshi is no longer a member of the Earth Senate, apparently. Find that out. And some Babylon 5 fans have commented that ISN and its reporters in this episode are eerily reminiscent of what would eventually become Fox News, Newsmax, and other right-wing news agencies, in which reporters interview people sympathetic to the channel's own viewpoint. ask thinly veiled yet pointed questions to those with opposing viewpoints in an effort to discredit them or to get an answer in such a way that could be used later against them, including creative editing of the quote to further take it out of context, and offering commentary couched in the form of simply reporting the news. Yes, pretty much. Yeah. I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
A bit of a spoiler, if anybody doesn't like spoilers, just zip ahead, about 30 seconds or so. Cynthia Talkman sums up near the end of the episode and uses the phrase, "Growth only comes through pain and struggle." This is an ideology that is exactly espoused by the Shadows in later seasons. One goof. Captain John Sheridan's middle name is given as David, his father's name, the name he eventually gives his son, and also the middle name of Commander Geoffrey Sinclair. In later episodes, he's always referred to as John J. Sheridan. Maybe it's a funny spelling of David.
Yeah.
Sean, any Star Trek connections?
There are a few, as a matter of fact. First off, I've got Christopher Curry, who played Ronald Quantrell in this episode. He was in Star Trek Voyager, the episode 1159, and he's credited as automobile driver.
Oh.
So that's exciting.
Star of the show. Crucial.
Oh, yes. Crucial. Yes. And then we've also got, what was his name? Granville Ames as the Psycop. He was in Star Trek Generations as Transporter Chief.
Oh.
Yes. And then we've got the boy in that commercial with the Psycop, John Christian Grass as Johnny. He was in Star Trek The Next Generations episode Disaster as Jay Gordon. You remember Jay Gordon.
Loves his radishes.
He does. He does indeed.
I thought his face was vaguely familiar. I didn't put two and two together there.
Well, he was a little bit older here in this episode. But.
Yeah. Okay, ratings. We use the system of jump gates, 5 jump gates for every episode of Babylon 5 we watch. IMDb uses a 10 out of 10 rating, and they have scored this as 7.8, which actually puts it into sort of the top 10 of their reviewed episodes so far.
Mm-hmm.
So, Sean, what?
I went back and forth on this one quite a bit, actually. This one was a hard one to pin down. It had a lot of good information. It wasn't really impactful in any way whatsoever, but we did get some foreshadowing with Franklin and the fact that he uses stims, and that does come back quite a bit in further seasons. Like Dan was talking about, he's a candidate for a walkabout, and I believe that's the actual episode name too. And we got to see Super Mario again, even if it was brief. It was a serviceable episode. I don't know. I'm going to give it a 3.75.
Okay. Looks like a middle of the road episode for you. Dan.
Yeah, it was interesting. It had a great concept. It had a great sort of delivery and a change in format. But like I say, did we learn anything we didn't already kind of know? It was a bit more explicit that actually, you know, the Psycor are moving in. They've got these new adverts coming out that they want to push their agenda and they're going to be more trustworthy and win support over. We get things like there's the, was it the Ministry of... Ministry of Truth, was it, they were talking about? And they were talking about President Clark's approval ratings have gone through the roof, but actually they're clearly just making up party bylines and making up sort of propaganda. It was a great way of introducing a little bit more depth to the stories going on, but as a standalone episode in its own right, it's not as great as some of the really good episodes that are coming up. I struggled with this one. Like I say, it was really big struggle to make some notes here because you couldn't really see the story and how it would have weaved had it been a normal episode in its normal format. So I'm actually going to do exactly the same as Sean and 3.75.
Oh, wow. Okay. My rating. I didn't really think this was particularly good. I didn't think it was particularly bad. It was sort of middle of the road. Yeah, I think it was very similar to a lot of MASH episodes that did this, when the cast were interviewed as the characters, but I don't think this was done as well. The reporter was a horrible, horrible reporter. I just didn't like her style. I didn't like what she was trying to do, but that's the point. That was the whole point of it. You know, they are, as Dan said, they like Fox News. They're just trying to bring their own agenda to the actual show. But that really makes her a really crap reporter, because there's no way anybody's going to give you any information. If you stand next to somebody while they're trying to do the job, they're not going to give you any meaningful discussion. She does get to interview them later and gets a bit more out of them that way. And I think that was the way she should have gone. I mean, she could have stayed at home and reported on the images sent back by the crew. She didn't even have to be there. Very few of her answers questions were actually answered. And I hate that. I really hate it. You see it on TV as well. When you get a media scrum and there's loads of reporters all trying to talk at once. Answer this question. And they're all shouting at once. It doesn't do a thing. it's a waste of time. It's an absolute waste of time. It only makes, the interviewer is stupid, because they're not getting any answer. They're not going to get anything at all. Even if they start chasing the target along the road, and they'll get no answer, but they have to make it sound as though, they won't give an answer because they're guilty. And, the reporter says, well, if you're not going to answer us, then that's an admission of guilt, isn't it? And they'll shout that as the guy's running off into the distance. And they'll say, as if to say, ha, see, he's guilty because he didn't answer the question. And it's just, it just winds me up. It's probably why I've put a low score on this one. I did like the Narn Centauri conflict, and the resolution was the best part of the show, but it might have been better as a proper story rather than the B plot. So I don't know. For that reason, I've given it a 2.5, which theoretically is middle of the road, because it's right in the middle of the five ratings that we give. However, when you look at all of the other ratings that I've given for the other shows, this is one of my bottom 10. So it shows that I'm scoring, above 2.5 mostly for, as an average. So, in fact, 3.5 is my average. 3.4 is Sean's average, and 3.2 is Dan's average. So there you go. Dan has placed this episode, in fact, into his top 10.
Mm. Yeah. I think it's interesting that you've seen this done before and possibly done better. Maybe if I had seen this format done better, then I would have appreciated it. I think I appreciated it more because I've seen it done so much worse in other shows. Mm. Of the very few episodes of like Supernatural that I've seen, there is an episode that's pretty much like this, where there's like a ghost hunters kind of program and they're following the actual guys who are, hunting vampires and actually seeing all of it. They never see anything. It's like the proper, scared of the dark. They hear like a creak of a door and they go ballistic, but they're interviewing the characters and you got sort of like a, in your face sort of style to it, but it wasn't as great an episode. And I think this did it better because it fitted that propaganda machine and news network way of doing things. So I wonder if that maybe sways the vote, because you've seen it done somewhat better in a different show.
That's quite possible. Yeah, that's very true. What did you think of Sheridan's closing answer to Torquin's final question, which was basically...
It made me think of Alexander's feedback from when he was talking about how Sheridan was sort of, how Sinclair said it and it wasn't as convincing for him. And when you came back to him and said, well, actually, I thought he was being a bit more metaphorical. So for me, it worked that way. I think this one was a little bit more convincing. You didn't have to see it as either literal or metaphorical. It made more sense that it was about inspiring people and doing, the extra mile, putting in the effort so that you actually reap the rewards later on. I enjoyed it.
Okay, so if that's everything, that is the end of this episode. Join us again next week when we will be discussing Season 2, Episode 16, Knives.
I'm Cynthia Torkman, ISN News. Good night.
If you have any thoughts on this episode, why not send in some feedback to the epsilon3@gmail.com. That's three, spelled T-H-R-E-E, not the number. Or you can find us on our Facebook page. Just search for the Epsilon 3.
Now, if you have any other problems, any other questions at all, just ask.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.